Brad Thomas has extensive firsthand experience with VOIP, leading a multi-phase implementation at the University of Wyoming. Thanks for being with us, Brad.
Thanks, Tom, and thanks to all the folks at Liebert for inviting me to talk to everyone about what we've been doing.
Brad, can you tell us a little bit about your move to VOIP?
Sure, Tom. Let me tell you a little bit about the University of Wyoming first, since the campus itself has heavily affected how we implemented the Voice over IP system. UW is one of the top-ranked colleges in the United States by several groups, the Princeton Review and Intel, for the technology that we support on campus. We're sort of a mid-sized campus. We have about 13,000 students. The campus itself is around 800 acres, and we have about 80 or 90 major buildings on campus. The one thing that really affected us in terms of our implementation plan was the way the campus is shaped. We're about 4 blocks wide, and we're 15 blocks long. And so the rather strange shape of the campus forced us into certain requirements for the way that we provided the fiber access to the buildings. One of the results was that we ended up splitting the campus into 3 sections and created what we call a major node in each section, which is where we bring our fiber optic cabling together into our backbone routers. So you may hear me mention the section or a major node in the course of this conversation, and that was just because of the strange shape of our campus. What happened to us was back in the 2000-2001 time frame, we were running and still are running a Meridian SL100 PBX on campus. And the processor that's in that PBX was going to be going out of support. Nortel was no longer going to support the processor that we were running, no software support, no maintenance support on it. And so we had a decision to make whether we wanted to upgrade the processor in the PBX, which was going to cost us several million dollars, or take the leap and move into voice over IP across the campus. Taking a look at the costs of both, it became evident that moving to voice over IP would probably end up saving us several million dollars in the course of this operation. However, we also knew that we didn't have the several million dollars right up front to spend. So with 6,100 phones, we were going to have to do this in a phased method. The other thing we did was went out and looked at vendors. We integrated or took a look at several different IP or voice over IP vendors and ended up choosing Cisco as our vendor of choice. They had about the best plan for moving into the future, and they also had some of the best technology that was available for voice over IP at the time. One of the things about this is as you think about integrating voice over IP into your campus, you've got a question of converging your voice and data networks. You've also got a question about making your data network become extremely reliable. In our case, it was critical. On a university campus, we have lots of laboratories and research facilities. And the telephones in those rooms have to work to make a 911 emergency call. If you have a single researcher working late at night and something happens, he has to be able to get a hold of some help. Now, on our campus, we have a campus police department that handles our 911. We aren't reliant upon the city or county for our 911 calls. That was really kind of nice in a way because it meant that we didn't have to implement a full E911 system to start with. We could do this through a static, manually maintained 911 system that we've been using for years. To make the thing reliable for 911, our CIO told us that the voice network, the voice over IP network, had to be configured in such a way as to emulate the activities of our PBX. If you think how a PBX works, everything in it is redundant. There are redundant processors, there's redundant memory, there are redundant data paths, there's redundant switching hardware. About the only thing in it that's not redundant is the single line card that your phone plugs into. What we were told is that the voice over IP network had to be the same way. We were allowed to have a single switch fail, which would be the same as having a line card fail and take down a limited number of phones, but we weren't allowed to have the entire phone system go down. When we started thinking about this, we realized we had a bunch of other obstacles to overcome. One, we didn't have a lot of expertise on how to build a converged network. This was the new frontier when we started thinking about it. At the time, Cisco had implemented maybe 2 or 3 small voice over IP networks in our region. The other problem we had was we had a lot of buildings that had Cat 3 and even pre-Cat 3 cabling in them that we were running data over. So we knew we were going to have to replace cabling to get ourselves up to Cat 5 and now Cat 6 standards to support the network. We had a lot of problem with power on campus, and that one was really critical when it became time to look at the reliability. We're kind of out in the middle of nowhere in some ways, And while there's multiple power feeds to the city, heavy snow and particularly wind and electrical storms at our altitude are major problems. We frequently have power blackouts on the campus during the summertime. Now, some of our buildings have generators that we can rely upon, but of course a generator isn't an instant start device. You've got to have a UPS in there. In other buildings, we don't even have generators, and so we had to be concerned about making sure that we had good, reliable emergency power as we moved into this converged network. We've been using UPSs from various vendors over the years, but some of them weren't as good as others. We bought UPSs from vendors that had the batteries fail within just a couple of months. We've had UPSs that the UPS failed within a couple of months. We've had UPSs that when the UPS batteries ran down, the UPS went down in a very, very dirty manner. And in fact, we lost some equipment due to a couple of those. We had UPSs that would not come back online when the power came back on. We had UPSs that actually allowed power hits through the UPS. A whole host of various problems just with the initial UPSs. And then later down the road, okay, after 2 or 3 years, it comes time that the batteries have finally run out, which batteries do, and it's time to replace them. Well, we didn't have a single UPS that we could do that without turning the UPS off, tearing it down, in some cases bringing it back to our maintenance facility to work on it. So it became a major concern to the reliability of the network that the UPSs be good. As we looked at all of these issues, we began to develop sort of a plan that what we were going to do to implement our new voice over IP system. One of our things was to find ourselves a good Cisco VoIP reseller. We've been dealing with ISC systems out of Casper, Wyoming for several years prior to this as our Cisco hardware reseller. And at the time, ISC was just really getting into the early partnerships with Cisco and becoming a VoIP certified reseller. So we decided to go ahead and use ISC as our reseller of choice and to help us implement this system. When you're looking at building a distributed system like a VoIP system, you need to be worried about how you're going to distribute the equipment such that you don't have single points of failure. And so we considered that what we wanted was more than one of everything. We wanted one call manager publisher. And then what we did was we put three redundant subscriber units in each of these three major nodes I mentioned. In the major nodes, we used 6500 series switches with redundant processors, redundant power supplies, redundant line cards. And then out in our wiring closets, we're using Cisco 4000 and 4500 switches, many of which have redundant processors and redundant line cards. Our hope was to build an architecture that was rid of single points of failure. Now, it's taken us a while to get here to where we can actually run VoIP everywhere. We've got about 109 wiring closets in, I don't know, almost 100 buildings, I think, now. And it's taken us a long time to replace the equipment. It's been a very staged, slow process. As we were looking at the reliability issues, in particular the UPSs, we realized that we had to pick a new vendor. None of the ones we had were happy. We were happy with. We've had a Liebert UPS in our main data center for about 6 years at that point. It's been 100% reliable. We've not had a single downtime issue related to the UPS itself. I just kind of looked at the world and said, well, we've tried everybody else. Why don't we try a Liebert small UPS and see how well it works? So we got a couple of the GXTs and put them in closets in the racks and ran them, and we had no problems. They survived the power hits. They survived the battery rundowns. They survived the power failures. They survived everything. And so we were really very happy with the Liebert GXT systems at that time. I mean, they were better than everything we tested. So now we had to figure out how to get that implemented across the campus. Once we'd standardized on Liebert double conversion UPSs, I mean, that's the thing that's going to protect you is the double conversion. We decided to start phasing out our existing UPSs and putting new ones in. In our major equipment rooms, the three major nodes, we had enough equipment in there because we not only have call managers and 6500s and 4500s, we have backup DNSs, we have backup domain controllers, all sorts of equipment in those rooms. We decided to choose the Infinity Series larger UPSs to protect those rooms. It just made sense that there was enough equipment in there that we really needed to have one large UPS instead of trying to tag a whole bunch of small ones in there at the same time. When you start thinking about reliability, you need to think about how long you want these batteries to run. We had a great deal of discussion about this issue. Obviously, you'd like to have the thing run forever despite a power failure. And if you've got a generator in a building, you can pretty much do that. You only need to provide enough UPS for the generator to start. Oh, and by the way, make sure the UPS is on the generator. We had that happen in one instance. You get the generator started, your UPS will run for hours. But like I said, a lot of our buildings, we don't have any generators. So we had to consider what was a reasonable period of time to provide backup power to the telephones in that building. Fortunately, the university has a policy that says if the campus is going to suffer a major extended power outage in any area, they evacuate the buildings. No one's allowed into them when the power is off for an extended period of time. So we decided that an extended period was about 2 hours. So almost all of our UPSs in the wiring closets have been purchased with a 2-hour backup time. Now, you need to be able to know if you're actually going to get that. So almost all of our UPSs were also buying the built-in SNMP cards, which will let us monitor the amount of runtime that's left on the UPS. Another tack that you can take is you may be worried about, well, what happens if the UPS fails? Most of the switches that we're buying anymore are at least dual power supplied. And usually the dual power supplies, one is enough to run the switch. One other tack we've taken is to plug one power supply into the UPS and the other one into bare power. In this way, if we should have a UPS failure, we've still got good power coming from somewhere until we can replace the UPS. So where are we today? Well, we've got about a dozen buildings wired. We've got several hundred phones. We're approaching 1,000 at this point. I mean, it's not the largest VoIP implementation in the world, but it's been an interesting experience to build the infrastructure to support it. What we've been doing is rewiring all of our new buildings and all buildings where we do a complete remodel with Cat 6 cabling. In the buildings where we've got Cat 3, what we've been doing is in locations where we need to have voice over IP, we bring in a single Cat 5 to support that. I'm terribly afraid to admit that a lot of our users are still running on 10 megabit to the desktop, and it's all an issue of the wiring on the campus. We've implemented a high reliability network. We now know that our 911 operators are going to be able to get calls from any of our VoIP phones in any of the locations, no matter what's going on with the electricity. And the nice thing about VoIP is that, you know, you can add a lot of features into it in the future. So now you can have a single button that is a 911 button in an emergency situation in certain laboratories. You don't even have to try to dial it. You can make a button be 911. You can make a button be an emergency call to the hazardous materials people. Some of those features are going to be very valuable to us in the future. So far, our network's been very reliable through power failures. We've had no downtime from UPS or battery issues. Most of our systems have been through extended power outages. In one instance, almost 12 hours. So far, all of the voice over IP systems have remained up for at least 5 hours, which tells us that our guesstimates on 2-hour runtime were probably a little bit low, that we actually ended up getting more out of the batteries than we suspected. And the best news is we haven't lost a single piece of equipment due to a power failure since we put these in. Another issue to consider as you move into the voice over IP environment is cooling. A lot of people don't think about it, particularly if you've got buildings where you've got older wiring closets where stuff is running okay today. I mean, the closet might be a little bit warm. You know, you've got some ventilation in there. But the voice over IP environment puts a lot of new load onto your cooling system. You've got all this power that has to be provided for the power over Ethernet. And so you need to start thinking about how you're going to cool these closets. Simply putting in, you know, a hole in the door is not enough anymore. You need to have some sort of forced ventilation. I mean, ideally what you'd like to have is precision cooling or air conditioning, but at the very least you need to make sure you can evacuate the heat out of the closet. We actually had several of our Cisco switches shut down early on because of heat in wiring closets. I talked a little bit about what we were going to be doing with this system in the future. One of our current projects is we're rebuilding our major classroom building. We're going to put a VoIP phone in every classroom, and we're going to key the buttons on it so that an instructor who may become confused with some of our latest teaching technology can walk over, push a single button on the phone, and dial a help desk for instructional technology. We're also going to have a single button that you can push to dial the, oh my gosh, the projector quit working help desk, or other non-question type support for failures in the rooms. We're also thinking about VoIP into our dormitories. Of course, in dorms anymore, most students are carrying cell phones. But we still have to provide phones for safety of life issues in the rooms. You have to be able to have a phone. Somebody can dial 911 and get help. A lot of universities are using the displays on their VoIP phones as an advertising medium and selling the space on the phone to pizza parlors and to hamburger places. And in fact, programming the buttons on the phone so that a single button will dial the pizza parlor or hamburger place. You can use the displays to put out emergency information like, you know, it's 34 degrees below zero today. It's not a good idea, good day to go outside wearing sandals and shorts. Campus is closed today due to a heavy snowstorm. Things like that. So what can I say about what we've learned about all this? Find yourself a vendor who knows VoIP and power over Ethernet. Make sure that his people are certified by whoever vendor you choose to do this work. It's not initially as easy as you would think. You don't just plug the phones in and some magic happens, particularly if you're going into a VoIP environment where you may have been relying on the phone company to provide PBX services and you haven't run your own PBX in the past. You're really going to need some help. It's not something that your average network person can walk in and take over. Now, saying that, what I've got to say is we're talking about a converged network, and you need to think about converging your staff. Your voice and network people need to work together. We're very lucky here in that the two groups have always reported to the same director. And so it's been very nice for us. We didn't have to go through argument phases over who was going to do what. We were very comfortable working together, and I think that's really been one of the keys to the success of what we've done, is the people got along. There's another university near here where the two groups are completely separate, and they've had a very rough time implementing a very similar network, and I think a lot of it was the territorial issues between the voice and data people. There's a need for converged staff. You need to think about the power you're going to use to support this. Remember, we're now talking about telephone jacks that could output up to 15 watts to run your telephone, maybe a wireless access point. You're going to be supplying power out of these wiring closets. And so you need to think about how you're going to get the power into the wiring closet. A couple of 110 jacks on the wall in the closet to power up the switch isn't enough anymore. You need to think about how you're going to provide higher power, 220 voltage plus. You might need to even think about three-phase in a huge closet, I suppose. You need to be aware that there's more than the simple old, you know, plug the switch in type power needed. When you start looking at your UPSs to do this, you need to think about the kind of plugs that are on the UPS and make sure that the plugs in the wiring closet match what you're going to be using. An L530 plug is a very common plug on the labor UPSs, and we've now specified those in a lot of our wiring closets. You need to make sure that your generators start and run. It's good to have a generator, but they should be tested generators. You know, that it's not something that sits there for months, and then one day you try to start it, and gee whiz, it just doesn't work. I like to think of the fact that we'd like to specify hospital-grade emergency power on our generators. We may not get it everywhere, but that's the kind of layer of support you're looking for if you're concerned about the 911 safety of life issues. UPSs, whoever you choose, make sure it's a double conversion UPS. Make sure you got enough power. You need the double conversion to protect you from the outside world. Make sure that the battery is there to give you whatever amount of time you think you need in an emergency situation. Those are really key issues to making sure your network's reliable. And like I say, make sure that the vendor's good. We were really happy to have ISC as our partner. They've done a wonderful job for us in making this whole network come together and run. I think that's about all the issues that I've got. Thank you for your time and attention.